Welcome to episode 140 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read Batman Incorporated by Grant Morrison. And now, the cast begins.
To another 2010 episode of the Atomic Pirate Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
Jen.
Hey.
And this week...
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Why is it 2010?
Because... All right. Everybody, we're a week late releasing this, in case you didn't notice, because last week, we all sat down to record on Monday night, and I was like, cool, let's talk about Bat-Cow. And Jen and David were like, that wasn't in this comic. And then I realized I had read Batman Incorporated 1-8 of the New 52. Was it New 52? Or I don't know. It was some recent renumbering from 2012.
Yeah, it was the New 52.
Yeah, the 2012 run. But we were supposed to read the 2010 run of 1-8.
Wait, okay. Let me stop you there. You mean the 2011 run, right?
Is it 2000? Okay. Are you fucking with me right now, or was it actually 2011?
My comic says January. It says 2011 on issue number one.
Whichever ones you gave me are the ones that I read.
Okay. Yes.
So then welcome to another 2011 episode. Okay.
Sorry, I totally screwed up your intro.
No, it's fine. This is more fun. So yeah, that's why we're a week late. I also wanted to take this as a moment to bitch about New 52 and the fact that they arbitrarily decided to renumber every comic they were publishing, even though they had absolutely no need to. And in some cases, like this, it creates mass confusion. Like this, and what's another one that I used as an example when I was bitching about this to somebody else? Green Lantern. Green Lantern is another example. It goes like 1 to 48 and then like 1 to 12. And it's like, it's a one big continual story. Why do you even need to... Why you gotta... Makes no purpose.
Everything was new, Andy.
No.
Everything.
No, not everything. This was not new, because I read what comes after this comic by mistake. And it's the same story.
I'm pretty sure when they published what you read in a trade, they marked it as Batman Incorporated Volume 1, and then they put Volume 2 in parentheses.
Yeah.
And it's, that's bad numbering.
Those parentheses will get you every time.
I mean, I know it doesn't matter for the quality of the comic, but come on, guys. It's just annoying. It's just annoying to your fan base. That's all it is. I know you can hear me, DC. My voice carries...
aside from numbers.
Aside from numbers, there's a whole lot of Batmans in this comic. It's Batman Incorporated 1-8 and Batman Incorporated Leviathan Strikes, written by Grant Morrison with art by Chris Burnham.
Some of it. Some of it's also Yannick Paquette.
Yes.
Michael Lacombe.
Which one was the Oracle Internet 3.0 issue?
Yes.
I think...
Was that Lacombe or Paquette?
That was Lacombe, I believe.
Okay, cool. So, what did you guys think of this Batman Incorporated?
After sitting on it a week, I'm less enthusiastic, I gotta say.
You two had a week to reflect on this.
I will still say that I enjoyed the reading of it.
Okay. Who was your favorite extra Batman? I shouldn't say extra Batman, because there's kind of like a hint that all these guys existed independently of Batman until Batman created Batman Inc. and then brought them in. So not your other Batman, but who's your other member of Batman Incorporated?
Dick Grayson, the most Batman of the Batman.
The most Batman-y of the Batman?
I don't know.
That shouldn't count.
I was expecting you to say El Gaucho.
I like El Gaucho. So I think I like the idea of El Gaucho more than El Gaucho himself.
He's Argentinian, right?
Yes.
See,
not that I think he's a bad character. Definitely not saying that.
No.
I liked Man of Bats also. He was pretty cool. Oh, I like Man of Bats, I think. You know, honestly, I think all of them have redeeming qualities. I think... Okay, so... I said Dick Grayson, but that was kind of jokingly. I think I like the ones that are more removed from Batman more than the others. So, like El Gaucho or Mr. Unknown, I think are cool because they are not, like, bat-named exactly. It's like, here's this version of Batman, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, you know, I like them all in the way. Even though Man of Bats has a bat in his name, I thought he was pretty cool, too.
Yeah, I have to agree. Mr. Unknown was really awesome. And I like that it kind of confronts the idea that we keep bringing up as an example of why the age of a character doesn't matter. Like, we always bring up the example of when Grant Morrison was sitting at a panel and somebody asked him, how old is Bruce Wayne anyway? He's been around since, like, the 40s. And Grant's answer was, it doesn't fucking matter. It's a comic book, okay? But I like that Mr. Unknown takes that more literally and, like, yeah, whoever was Mr. Unknown originally, who was this amazing, like, mastermind of crime solving, like, he got old. And his sidekick stepped up and did all the street stuff. And maybe his sidekick's not as good of a detective, but, I mean, you got earpieces and shit nowadays. It's fine. You're okay. And it's kind of neat to see that challenge of the evolution of the character come to fruition when you can't do it necessarily in continuity without, like, killing Bruce Wayne and to make Dick Grayson the actual Batman.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Jen? Who is your favorite?
I'm going to exclude Knight from this just because he's one of my favorite heroes, like, aside from that. Like, I really love Knight and Squire. So if I had to pick one other, I would say Man of Bats, because I appreciated that he almost seems a little like a fanboy, but with this great amount of integrity. So he has, you know, the little Batman museum thing going, and, like, all these photos and relics, but he's turned it into more than hero worship. He's actually, you know, someone who's making an impact in his community as a civilian and as a superhero. And I thought that made him really likable.
Yeah, what's cool about him, to add on to what Jen said, he was a Batman franchise before Batman Inc. was a thing.
Yeah.
Like, Mr. Unknown was he was a hero similar to Batman in that he was a detective and he wasn't superpowered, that kind of stuff. But Man of Bats was the first, I'd like to say he's the first franchise.
You know,
maybe that's not entirely true, but maybe you could say Dick is the first franchise. I mean, Bloodhaven and stuff.
True.
But you know, he was more emulating Batman, where Dick, when he moved to Bloodhaven and became Nightwing, tried to become his own hero.
Yeah, he was trying to break away from the fold.
Right.
Yeah, I got to agree with you guys, though. I got to go with Man of Bats, too. Just because, what was it? There was a scene where, like, he went and stood out in front of a museum to get a piece of his cultural heritage back, and he did it as Man of Bats. And I'm like, dude, yes, that is the kind of heroic thing that is super important for a community like this, but would never get brought up in a superhero comic unless you had somebody like this character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's a lot of stuff that Man of Bats does like that too. I think they're going and his son is saying, I'm like, in a year, I'm going to be ineligible for the Teen Titans, you know, and like, what are we doing here, wasting our time? Like, I should be out, like, fighting, you know, a real supervillain or something if we're going to call ourselves Man of Bats and the Raven. Instead, all we're doing here is beating up domestic violence guys and stuff, you know? And it's like, from a kid's perspective, maybe it's not as cool to do what Man of Bats is doing when he does that kind of thing, but in terms of holding a community together, man, that shit's important. I mean, that's just, like, if he's going to somebody's home to stop domestic violence, that's just as heroic as Bruce Wayne going out and taking down Spiral as Batman. I mean, it's just as important on a different scale, but, I mean, that shit's, for a community like that, that's small and closely knit, that is super important, and it deserves the same respect as anything else, and I think that this comic gives that kind of hero that respect too, which is great.
And you can tell that his community values him too. Mm-hmm. They don't think he's some sort of wacky vigilante or a lawbreaker. His neighbors know who he is, you know, outside of his superhero identity, and they respect him as the hero. They call him Man of Bats, and, you know, I think at the very end, they swarm the bad guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, get rid of them. And earlier, like, they're very thankful when he comes by and does things like deliver groceries. So he's making, one might say, even more of like a personal impact than Batman does. Because yeah, Batman is secretive, and you never know who he is, and he doesn't mingle with the people. Whereas Man of Bats really is a member of his community in every way possible.
And the other thing that gets me about this issue of this trade is that you see character growth in his son. Because early on, his son is bitching about his father and what he's doing. He's complaining that it's not worthwhile and that it's stupid. But by the end of this, when Batman says, I'm going to bring you into the fold, I'm going to make you part of Batman Incorporated, and I'm going to send you a couple Batmobiles, right? And I think that's when his son like realizes, no, we don't need a Batmobile. Which is, ironically, the exact same thing he was saying they needed early on, that his truck was fucking busted and it was stupid, right? But by then, he's like, no, my community doesn't need a Batmobile. My community needs things like police and, like, a school and a post office and a fire station. You know, like, my community needs tangible things that will help people in their daily lives. And I thought it was so awesome to see that written down and for somebody to say that to Bruce Wayne's face. Because every time I read this and and you see Bruce Wayne, like, fly in on the bat jet and the rappel off of the super bat grapple gun fucking thing with his bat shark rappel and all this high-tech, weird, random crap, right? And I'm like, damn, how many people could you have fed in the poor parts of Africa with all that money? with as much money as he spends, you could give everybody in the world $1 million. I mean, or, like, 10,000. And how much better would their lives be? Like, are you really doing the maximum good for the way that you're spending your money here, Bruce? And it was so cool to see somebody basically say that to his face. Like, no, sending me a Batmobile is fucking stupid. I need food. We need a grocery store.
So, I think one of my favorite things about this trade is I actually bought the hardcover deluxe edition, and it has excellent liner notes. And Grant Morrison gives a little background behind his inspiration for each of the characters.
Oh, awesome.
And I think the reason Man of Bats resonates so well is, I'm just going to read this little bit right out of here because he says it best. He writes, "The portrayal of Man of Bats and Raven was partly inspired by my own dad's social activism and his role as community counselor for the deprived working class housing scheme of Corker Hill in Glasgow. While researching the horrendous third world conditions that are endured by men, women, and children on reservations in South Dakota, I was not entirely shocked to learn that the only parts of the developed world with similar drug, alcohol, and unemployment and poverty and death rate statistics are here in the west of Scotland, where I currently write this piece." So I think part of the reason that we see such an interest in Man of Bat social activism is because it resonates with the author himself. And it was kind of neat to see, like, oh, so that's why he wrote it so well. That's a reason maybe he wrote it so well, because he knows what this is and he's seen it firsthand.
That's awesome insight.
And actually, let me pimp another podcast right now. If you wanted to hear more about Grant Morrison's life, there is an episode of Kevin Smith's Fat Man on Batman that with Grant Morrison they're really excellent. And, you know, listen to us, of course, but, you know, if you want to listen to somebody else talk about Batman too.
See, but
yeah.
I mean, it's interesting that we sit here and I think every time we've read a Grant Morrison trade, we tend to complain more than compliment. And it's because he has this tendency to get weird and philosophical and out there. And maybe those things he doesn't do great. And you could get the impression reading that listening to some of those episodes that perhaps we don't think he should be writing comics. He should be writing philosophy novels or whatever the fuck philosophers write these days. But it's issues like this when Grant Morrison's able to confront something tangible in the world and create meaning for it through the medium of comic books that he's fucking awesome. Like, this is done so amazingly well, start to finish. This one issue of Man of Bats, at least. Like, this is where Grant Morrison shines, and it's great. It's so great, and it makes up for a lot of complaining I've done about him in the past, and probably will do him later on in this episode. So, I'm surprised nobody liked El Gaucho more. I thought he was interesting.
Yeah, he was definitely interesting. I think we just all liked Man of Bats. A lot.
So who else shows up in this? We get El Gaucho. We get Man-Bat. Is it Man-Bat? The one in Matamba?
That's Batwing?
Batwing. Yeah. We get Black Bat momentarily in Hong Kong.
I wish we had more of her.
I know, right? I love Cassandra. And then we get a little bit of Night Runner in France, just like a scene or two.
He's got the superpower of parkour.
Yes. Hardcore parkour. What else do we get?
We get Batwoman.
Yeah,
Batwoman, Mr. Unknown.
Oracle and Batgirl.
Oracle, Batgirl, Red Robin.
Stephanie Brown.
So we get basically everybody in this, right? Except for, I don't think we see Knight and Squire much. We see the Hood. Okay, wait, so explain this. Does Britain have two? Knight and Squire and the Hood?
Okay, so I don't know if you guys have read the Knight and Squire trade. I think it's just like six issues by Grant Morrison. That one's set in modern day, and the knight in the modern day one, he used to be Squire, and his dad was Knight.
Oh, that's cool.
So everyone we see here, this actually takes place in the 1980s, and everyone except Knight was created just to die in this comic, which I thought was really interesting. So, Knight here is current Knight's father. Was it Captain Albion? Based off of Captain Britain. And then some of the others are just kind of random. Like, the guy who looks really, like, weirdly, I don't know, time traveler foppish Victorian with the guns.
Yes.
I think, what did they say? He was actually partially based off the Doctor from Doctor Who. And his style was based off of Adam Ant. That makes sense. But it's like, they're meant to be kind of just these weird alternate British heroes that are just plot devices. I don't know. It makes me sad because I wish some of these people I want to know more about, like the futuristic android-looking lady.
So those were the guys, were they in issue 3?
Okay, wait, so this entire trade wasn't set in the 80s, right?
No.
Just that issue with Herr Netz, Dr. Netz, or Dr. Daedalus, or whatever his name is.
Yeah, and this confused me, because we had a lot of flashbacks and flash-forwards.
Yeah, I was thoroughly confused, apparently, about the movement of time, because I thought that was present day.
Yeah, the only reason I know this, mind you...
I got the notion... Oh, sorry, go ahead, Jen.
Oh, the only reason I know this is because I read the notes in the back, so it was not well explained.
Mm-hmm. I kind of figured it out that I'm talking about the beginning of issue 3. I think I figured that part was not the current day because we go back to the island later. And I'm not really sure how. I just kind of figured it out in my mind. I can't think of an exact point where I realized what the difference was, but I did figure that out eventually.
So... I'm not actually strong with history. Did Argentina and Britain ever actually have a dispute over the Falkland Islands?
Yes, there was war over it.
This is my history is like strong until 1600, and then my timeline ends.
It's okay. It's okay. We're Americans. We don't need to worry about the history of other countries.
Whoa! I knew about it. I don't remember what the war was called, but. Yes, there was a war. I guess it's just called the Falklands War.
I think you might know about it because you have a distinctly Scottish last name, David.
Oh. Well, it's not like my grandparents told me about it or anything.
Yeah, but I'm going to blame it on that. Same way, if German history comes up, you can blame it on me if I know it.
Okay.
Shows you how super edumacated I am, but I think we were supposed to get the time frame from knowing about that war, but this is America. They don't teach history.
Yeah, well, and it's, you know, Scottish author and all that kind of good stuff.
Wow. Sorry, this is a little side note. There's a Newsweek cover that's about the Falklands. It's from 1982. And so it says Newsweek, right? And then there's a picture of an aircraft carrier, and it says, "The Empire Strikes Back, The Falklands Crisis."
Very good.
Thank you, Newsweek.
Yes.
So the only thing that kind of gets me about this comic, and I like seeing all these different iterations of Batman and how he would exist in other cultures. I think that idea is really, really cool. I just think it maybe could use more time. Like, I get the sense that there's a big coherent story being tied together here from all these strands. Except there's time that's spent showing us characters that maybe don't matter as much to it, or don't tie as closely together, or I'm just not getting it because we keep bouncing all over the fucking globe that I can't get a good piece of this. And I don't know if that's my fault, I don't know if that's the art's fault, I don't know if it's the writer's fault, but like, we get to see Night Runner, which is cool. I think Night Runner's a neat idea. Of course the French Batman would be a parkour expert. He's in fucking Paris and shit. But why was he in this comic? I don't actually know that part.
Well, I think some of the issues are introducing characters. Like issue 7 doesn't, which I think is the one with El Gaucho, doesn't really move the overall story forward. The one with with Leviathan.
Yes.
It kind of does, because the gang at the end says something about Leviathan, right?
Yes. Yes.
But this is kind of the establishing arc where you get to meet Batman Inc. And Batman Inc. is pretty big. So I think that it kind of bounces back from like a pseudo origin story to the actual storyline. But the conflict itself, I don't think. I think the conflict with Leviathan is intended to drive the team together, because yes, Batman needs to create an army. But I think that's a very, I think it was kind of loose.
Yeah. That's a great word to use.
but that's definitely the reason why, I guess is the reason why it kind of flops around a little bit.
Yeah, I think,
because like we jump to the issue with Man of Bats, and we go through this story where he, like, we learn who he is, what his situation is. Then he fights this small-time thug who, it turns out, is actually has people in the police. And then it's like, oh, wait, it's actually been Leviathan the whole time. And it kind of comes out of nowhere, because it's like, why is Leviathan targeting this small Indian reservation of all places, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like, okay, that's why Man of Bats, you know, it ties him into the overall story.
Yeah, and Batman's able to handily write it off and say that Leviathan is targeting the areas that the government is forgetting about. You know, and that's a strong theme if you read the next trade after this, like I did. That, mm-hmm, like, Leviathan targets poor schools, you know, targets these poor areas, these areas that the government wants to neglect and forget about.
Or like the human trafficking we see in, yes, with Night Runner, and these like military dictatorships that we see with Batwing, right? Yes.
I think it's a matter of pacing and art, because I think these flashes to like Batwing in Matamba and Night Runner in France are supposed to be like side themes, right? Like, we're supposed to get this image of Batman jetting around the world and bringing people into the Batman Inc. fold. And by the way, here's three panels of this quick idea that I had about the French Batman. And here's three panels about this Matumban Batman. And there's three panels about, I don't know, this other Batman. Except it's not like that. It's like three or four whole pages. And so I think when you give it that much space in the comic, I feel like that's supposed to mean something, or tie in somehow, or that this character is important, except this is an 8-issue trade and never ends up being important.
Yeah, I think the issue here is the scale of the trade, because I kind of feel like if we saw all these things happening, like you said, and then saw them resolve, we'd be like, oh yeah, he left us this breadcrumb to follow, and that's really clever. But what actually happens is we never see these things play out, and, you know, we're like, oh, well, it's going to be a year till the next trade. I don't want to get the issues or something, right? So it kind of feels like it falls flat. And I almost feel, I know that trades are a huge moneymaker in the industry, and there's a lot of incentive to put them out. But at the same time, I feel like maybe just even based on the snippets of what you said about the next volume, this would have done really well as one of those like giant omnibus collections instead, where we get the whole thing.
Yes. Yeah, it really would have. Very, very much. And I think an example of how this could have been paced so that it worked really, really well is actually Final Crisis, another Grant Morrison comic, when Superman has to fight Monarch in the Bleed, and he goes out and recruits the Superman from all the other dimensions, right? And you get maybe a panel, two panels about Nazi Superman, one or two panels about Commie Superman, one or two panels about the Shazam Superman. And you get just enough to get, that's a neat little idea, I would want to read more of this guy, but he's not, like, his background and his dimension are not important for the story that I'm reading right now. So that's a cool idea, thank you for showing me, and now back to focus. And it happens quick enough that you can appreciate it, but it doesn't linger so long that you put weight into it as the reader that maybe shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, this would have been amazing as a two-piece trade, because I actually feel like this one, this trade on its own, like standalone, is not nearly as strong as the next volume is. The next volume is phenomenal by comparison. So if you like this at all, I would say go pick up the next one, because I thoroughly enjoyed that, and I'm really iffy on this one.
You know, I feel like that I know that we didn't love the New 52 Teen Titans, but I feel like the way that because I read some of the next trade after the one we read, and I feel like this that did a better job of an origin story and then a big conflict, where this tried to push them together a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because we got the first, what was it, like the first few issues where Robin like gathered the team, and then they had a conflict where Superboy was kind of the big bad at the end.
Yes.
And then that was kind of the conclusion. And then they go to nowhere, and there's all that junk with like the Ravagers and the Legion of Superheroes. It's really confusing.
Yes.
But here, I think Grant Morrison's trying to do the same thing where he does an origin story of the different characters. I mean, it's not like a real origin story because these characters are established already. But we, you know, this thing that brings them together. But here it's kind of loose because it's like Batman making an army. But you don't really get that until you don't really get the need for the army until you get to Leviathan Strikes, I think.
Yeah.
And then at the end of Leviathan Strikes, it's like, wait a minute, he doesn't even really need an army because
it's just fucking Talia.
Yeah, it's just Talia.
And this weird big guy standing behind her.
Yeah.
Which, that guy's fucking cool.
So, I think maybe it was an editorial thing, because if you, on the very last page of Leviathan Strikes, it says continued in
2012.
And so that is where it breaks, and then it picks up again in the New 52 with the next volume one, I'm assuming. And so maybe they had to cram all this stuff in
before the launch of New 52?
Knowing that there was going to be this break.
You might be right.
That's complete speculation on my part. But, yeah, like you were saying, Andy, it's kind of, there's a lot of jumping around.
Yeah. And then that Leviathan Strikes trade. Okay, so when I read this wrong the first time, I read 1-8, and then I read Leviathan Strikes, and I'm like, why is this even important? The story's already resolved itself. Like, this should have gone way before everything I just read. Turns out it actually did. But my original reaction to that was, what the fuck is this doing here? And my reaction is, I know why this is here, but it's still really, like, oddly perverse. You know? Like, the conflict happens in a locker room while they're changing. And, like, it's this whole schoolgirl vibe. And the headmistresses are, like, dominatrixy drawn. And that whole part was really awkward to read. normally, I'm really into the gratuitous stuff in comics. Like, we have in the notes. The first issue is basically starring Batman with guest actor Catwoman's ass. I think Jen wrote that.
Yep.
But really, I was perfectly fine with that. It's terrible. It appeals to the lowest common denominator, but I pretty much am that denominator. I didn't pick up this trade just for Catwoman's ass, but I turn the page and I go, hey, Catwoman's got a nice ass. But in this, it's still, even for me, like knowing that about me, this felt weird. This felt a little weird, even for me.
Yeah, I think it was like the random sex thing. And first off, these are kids.
Yeah.
Like, they seem like they're maybe 13, 14, so that's kind of like, ew.
Pedophilia.
And then, I don't know, I don't mind sexy villains or sexy heroes, but it almost seemed like evil and sexiness were related somehow in this, because the evil initiation ceremony had all these beauty tools, right? The needle brush and the acidic hairspray, like the deadly lipstick. And it almost felt like we're supposed to look at Batgirl and say, ooh, you know, she's not one of those slutty 13-year-olds. She's a pure one or something. Not like that extreme, but I didn't like
when,
this
like when
connection.
Terror wore makeup in Judas Contract?
Oh, God, that was so awful.
This is kind of similar.
But yeah, it's kind of like putting on makeup as a 13 or 14-year-old girl doesn't make you bad in any way. And I find it weird that these beauty products are being used, like, okay, lipstick taser, whatever, like, you know, neat bat weapon. But there was like an association with evil here that was so strange. Made no sense.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not, I will say, it's not even the first time that I was weirded out by the sexuality of a character in this. I was way weirded out by what's her name? Scorpiana.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That is the worst costume I have ever seen.
It's just the helmet.
Well, the helmet is like the head of the scorpion, and then tail comes out like the back of her head. And then she's just wearing like a blue bathing suit, like onesie. Like what? With hooker boots. I don't understand. I don't understand how this costume... Huh?
I totally see someone designing this in their studio by themselves, like late at night after having drank a lot of coffee, and they start drawing it and they're like, yeah, this is going to be real sexy.
Scorpiana.
She's, you know, she's like seductive and dangerous. And I'm like... Okay, like hooker boots and a weird head scorpion tail is not a good mix of those things.
Head scorpion tail, yes. Okay, wait, but there was more to Leviathan Strikes than the weird schoolgirl thing, right? What happened after that? I cannot remember all of it. I've had like half a bottle of wine.
They went on to the Leviathan, which was the boat.
Yes, that's right, that's right.
And that was confusing.
Yes,
I mean,
that
I know
was
what
quite
happened.
Confusing.
Ooh,
and
Morrison.
Then the Outsiders were there.
Well, we got was it the end of the Internet 3.0 issue where we saw the Outsiders.
Yeah, I think that's when Red Robin becomes the boss of the Outsiders.
Right, Red Robin and the Outsiders. So they didn't show up out of nowhere.
Right, yeah, right.
But
that's the other reason I was thoroughly confused the first time I read this.
But they were like on a space station all of a sudden, and then Mr. Death, what's his name? Lord Death Mask?
Lord Death Man.
Oh, Lord Death Man. He was actually kind of funny.
Corny. I love it. I love that name. So, remember how I think Mr. Unknown and company trapped Lord Death Man in a box on a space station?
Yeah.
That happened, right? So,
that is
true. They were on the same space station, I think, I hope. Maybe.
I think they just had him orbiting space. Like, they put him in a safe.
Orbiting space?
Yeah, remember? Because orbiting the planet in space. Leave me alone. I've had a lot of wine. I've made it sound. I've kept the pouring sound away from the mic. Yeah, remember? Because they were like, okay, if ever we kill you, you're just going to come back to life. That's your thing. So how do you like this? And they fold him up, because he's just bones and you can fold him, and shove him into a safe and then launch the safe into space to orbit the planet.
Yeah,
that's
actually
how they got rid of him.
Now that you mentioned that, that was at the end of issue
two? Yeah. think?
Yeah, two.
Drunk and still got it right. Booyah. Yes, that.
So now that we're, sorry skipping back, but now that we're talking about issue two, was anyone disappointed that Mr. Unknown had a Batman costume on at the end when he was fighting the gorilla?
A little bit. Nobody else put on a Batman costume arbitrarily.
I liked his floppy hat.
His hat with the cape and the black, like,
yeah,
Japanese suit kind of thing. It was cool.
I mean, I guess it makes sense because Mr. Unknown had to die.
Oh, so that's true, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I thought Mr. Unknown was pretty cool in his own right. I wish that hadn't panned out the way it did.
Yeah. And that was actually, at first I was like, really, bro, tentacle monster octopus in the floor below?
It's very troubling.
And then I was like, that's so horribly stereotypical of you to create. And then I was like, but it's kind of fun. I ended up being okay with it when all they had to do was break the glass from the outside.
Yeah, and it's not like there was any, like, weird... I mean, it wasn't like an alien. It was just a big squid, and...
Yeah.
I think the part that got me was when Batman and Catwoman go and investigate the manga shop that Mr. Unknown's running.
About that.
Catwoman picks up a piece of tentacle porn and starts reading it and is like,
That's
what... And, I think it was... Not the subtle, it was not a subtle parallel, but like the really obviously, hey, tentacle porn reference, where I was just kind of like,
yeah, I completely forgot about that. And I didn't put that in the notes because I was like reading out in a park and I forgot to put that in the notes. But yes, that disappointed me when I read that. And I was like, really? That's what you're going to boil down? Like, probably hundreds of years of manga culture in Japan, you're going to boil it down to, hey, tentacle porn, huh?
From the guy who gave us the filth.
Yeah, that's how you're going to represent it in Western comics? All this can do is reinforce the ignorant American comic book reader who thinks that that's all that manga is and refuses to read it. But that's I mean, that's here nor there, I say that. But it's bad, but it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, I mean, they could have done way worse with that scene, so...
Yeah. It's not nearly as disappointing as the Internet 3.0 issue in this trade. For me, anyway.
This is the future of Google Glass, did you not know?
No, because it's not even that. It's beyond whatever we have right now. It's the Internet 3.0, which is crazy, because in the real world, we're still on Internet 1.0.
You know what's funny? If you look at it, it's basically like a really dangerous, scary holodeck.
Yeah, or, what is it, in Caprica, the TV show, when they go into the new Caprica City.
I haven't watched that yet.
Yeah, nobody watched that. It's fine. It was not that good. But it's basically that. Hmm. Or The Matrix, right? Where, like, if you die in The Matrix, you die in the real world kind of a thing. That was here, too.
Oh, that is true, yeah.
I find it weird, though, that... I mean, I'm sure it wasn't necessarily the intention, but why would Wayne Corp make a holographic internet that would kill the investors? You know, like, that even had that potential.
Right, and they created it. Why is it even an open internet? Why isn't it just a closed intranet within the Wayne Corp building? So that nobody can gain access to it except for the... Well, I guess they did say that one of the investors brought in the thing. I guess that does make sense after all.
Kind of.
But still, it was pretty...
A little wacky.
It was pretty hokey.
Yeah. That I don't know. That whole issue was disappointing for me. Because it's like, Internet 3.0, Morrison, are you getting old? You don't know how the web works anymore.
Yeah, it felt like an old person writing about technology. Like, that's really what it was.
Poor Grant Morrison.
He's not even old.
No, he's not. But, no, I think because we have seen so many really far out versions of what the future of the internet can look like, that even for Grant Morrison, it's hard to get abstract in that space. Especially for people like us who have seen anime. It's hard to get more abstract than things like Ghost in the Shell. Or hard to get more abstract than things like Akira.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's Grant Morrison is even struggling to get that weird and keep it about the internet and still make it possible to put into a mainstream American comic book. it's hard to juggle all that, to keep it weird, but keep it in this audience, make it about Batman. It's a difficult thing to juggle, and I think maybe better to just not do it. The only problem is that the internet is Oracle's world, right? She controls data, she controls flow of data, she's a safe house of information, and she's supposed to be like a world-class master hacker. So if you're going to showcase all of the Bat family, you have to showcase Oracle. And how are you going to do it other than in the internet? And I don't know, I guess because this comic was supposed to be action, 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 they couldn't just show her like rolling around in a wheelchair in a room full of computers. I don't know. But I think that's how we get here, is you need Oracle somehow.
I mean, but she's featured well in Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention, too. Like, there are ways to, showcase her skills that aren't Tron.
Yeah. And I think the putting in different art is the decision people make.
It almost reminds me of Zoolander, where it's like, the files are in the computer. You know?
It's like Zoolander meets Matrix. The files are in the computer. Your brain is the file. Whoa. Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it, David.
Yeah. It's just like, it just doesn't quite work.
Yeah, and I think aside from the weirdness of that, the drastically different art style, just, it's disconcerting, and maybe it's fine in the month to month if I pick up the monthly issues and I see there's different artists on the cover, I'm prepared for it, I see it, great. But when I'm going through this in a trade, I turn the page and holy fuck, what the hell is this? It's jarring, it pulls you out of it, and I think because Chris Burnham's art is so clean in Batman Incorporated Leviathan Strikes, and the artist in the previous Batman Incorporated issues.
Yannick Paquette.
Yannick Paquette, because their art is so much cleaner. This looks super busy and over-textured. I don't know if that's the penciler, the colorist, the digital, whatever the fuck. I don't know why, but this art was so busy. So many layers of textures and light, and it just was difficult to piece apart and read. This art just did not work for me at all.
Yeah, it was... I felt like there was enough of a lack of variation in color that made it a bit harder to follow what was going on. And it was meant to be more abstract, so that was difficult. But I don't know. I want to backpedal just a little bit back to Oracle. I think my major gripe with her, I just realized this, is that Oracle's meant to be a hero who shows you that you can use your mind as a superpower, kind of, and you can use your brain and you don't have to be physically superb to everyone else. You don't have to be Bruce Wayne or Superman. You don't have to be trained as a ninja or be an alien. You can be a very smart person and, you know, do a lot of good in the world. And I feel like, I know that Oracle as Batgirl did her fair share of fighting, and this is empowering because it's kind of like, you know, there are places where you're certainly not limited by what your body can do.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I kind of feel like a lot of what her comic should be about is you're certainly not limited by what your body can do. Look at what your mind can do. Look at what you can achieve as a person no matter what. And I feel like just watching her do a bunch of kung fu in Internet 3.0 took that away.
Okay. I was about to just, like, say, hell yes, you are way fucking right. That is the entire point of her character. And back you up and say it's kind of mentioned and how Batman, as Bruce Wayne avatar, stops and pauses and kind of disconnects from the boardroom conversation when he has to control the Batman avatar, and he says, this is really fucking difficult, I don't know how you do it. Meanwhile, there are three Batgirls jumping around and kicking ass like it's no fucking problem. Like, obviously, Oracle is enough presence of mind in this world and able to control three different independent cognitive functions at the same time is really impressive about her ability. And then I realize this is the last issue of the trade, and then Leviathan happens, and the New 52 reboots the universe, and Oracle's not in a chair anymore.
Oh, yeah.
So, I just realized, in the entire run of this comic, I don't think we see Barbara Gordon in a chair, do we?
I don't know. I mean, in the New 52, I have read the New Batgirl. She was in the chair.
She was.
But she was able to rehabilitate.
Yeah.
So.
Because they kind of was like, you know, if Batman can do it after Bane, why can't,
Oracle. You know,
why can't Oracle? And it makes, that to me makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, you could say gunshot, better doctor, worse doctor, but yeah. Basically, if Batman recuperates after Bane, especially if they do it, like, say, in the movie where he does it in the fucking pit by some voodoo doctor, of course, the daughter of the commissioner could do it. I get that, but, like, I don't think we saw her in a chair at all here.
No, I don't think so.
No, this was all digital space.
Yeah, that might be why we get her this way.
Hmm.
Which makes sense and gives us an excuse, but I think, I don't know. It feels like that's an editorial decision driving the comic, or I don't know. I want to come up with some complaint here, just because I'm generally disgruntled, but I can't put it in there.
So I just started flipping through this issue looking to see if Barbara Gordon was in there. She's not. It's just Oracle. I did run into, like, a really weird question. Do you remember the part where the lady turns into the dog and then her fellow board member falls in love with her?
The lady does. Okay. I was confused because the woman's gone and then there's a dog. And the dog just is speaking numbers. So I didn't know. Okay. Right. Weird.
But, like, it's not just that did happen, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And then the guy fell in love.
I just kind of walked it out a little bit.
Yeah, Morrison.
Just wanted to check that I saw that with my eyes and I'm not, like, experiencing a stroke or something.
So you brought that up and it reminded me, and I just want to mention it briefly, in the Man of Bats episode, in the Man of Bats issue, the hooligan gang leader kicks a dog. That pisses me off every single time I see it. There's no reason to do that in a comic book. It just is not cool. Like, show him beating up, I don't know, another healthy guy who's just innocent. That's equally morally wrong, but is easier for me to read.
Yeah.
There's never a good reason to abuse animals, and there's never a good reason to show animal abuse. And, like, at least you could say if he's a gang person beating up a perfectly healthy guy, maybe it's for some gang initiation, maybe he needs his wallet, maybe this, maybe that. There's all kinds of social things you can put into that interaction, but there's no interaction you can put into a dog getting beat up.
Yeah, that's just evil.
Yeah, so I just wanted to throw it in there. It's totally not related to the Internet 3.0 issue, but it did remind me. So now that I've stunted our conversation, how about we talk about the art?
Okay.
What did you guys think of this stuff?
I thought the art was great. Especially in the issues 1-7 or 8.
Okay, wait. So which ones were Chris Burnham? Was that 1-7 and Leviathan Strikes? Look, I should know this because he's the artist that I liked.
Yannick Paquette was the penciler for... He did the first two issues, and he did the issue with the hood, where he first appears, the one where he's in the jet.
Yes.
He does the pencils for those.
Yeah, Yannick Paquette does all of the first seven, looks like I'm scrolling through. Yeah.
No, number 6 is Chris Burnham.
Yeah, is Chris Burnham, and Batman Leviathan Strikes is Chris Burnham as well.
Yeah.
And I want to point him out specifically because he did the entire run of the second trade, which is why I want to bring him up. And you get a little bit of it here in Leviathan Strikes and issue 6. To me, his art looks a lot like Frank Quitely. You can definitely see inspiration. I don't know who drew from what or how that goes, except I don't think it's as inspired. It's more traditionally framed kind of a thing. The perspectives of Chris Burnham's art is more traditional. But I think he uses the style better, and he's better to read, right? Like, whenever we read Frank Quitely nowadays, I always think of him as, like, pudgy fingers drawing. Like, everything looks kind of pudgy, and, like, it's this comic book lines, but it's all kind of grimy in this weird way that my brain doesn't handle well for whatever reason. But when I read Chris Burnham, those problems go away, and I get the insanely good facial work and expression and movement that's in Frank Quitely without all the burdens of it. And so I want to point him out as a really standout thing about the next trade as well. And if you liked his pieces in Leviathan Strikes and Six, then you will like the next trade. Because I keep pimping the next trade instead of what we actually read. So what do we think of Paquette's art? Good?
Butts.
What?
Butts.
Oh, butts.
Oh, butts.
Butts. So yeah. Many butts.
I like it. Man.
I don't know. Okay, I guess...
I like it unless it's Scorpionis butt. And then it's weird butt.
You know, I don't mind a nice butt until someone's contorting in like a completely ridiculous position to show you that butt. And then I'm just like, nope, can't do that.
Yeah.
Actually, I kind of have a weird complaint, and it's kind of throughout, is that Batman's cod piece really stands out to me.
They want you to know why he's the Batman. Plus.
It's got like rivets on it, and it's kind of maybe connected to his belt. I don't know why that. Yeah, okay. It's like little rivets.
Oh my God, it does. Like.
Well, how else are you going to keep that monster in there?
In the Batcave.
Yeah, you need some heavy noodle machinery just bolted in there.
The rivets make it look like some hardcore chastity belt. He's protecting himself from getting raped by Talia again.
Wait, this is after Jezebel Jett. Maybe that's exactly what it is. Maybe it's an outward symbol of his, I'm not there for women anymore.
Except Catwoman.
Because she steals things. Including the key to the chastity belt.
This is turning into bad fan fiction.
Okay, you know what, though? It's a weird segue for me to make, but you're talking about Batman's manhood, and it made me realize that all of the members of Batman Incorporated are men, aren't they?
No, Batwoman. The only
female members of Batman Incorporated that we get are the ones that existed before Batman Incorporated existed.
Okay, yeah, I think that's actually accurate.
Right? Bat is Cassandra Cain, just in another part of the world with a different name. Oracle's there, Batwoman's there, but all those existed before this idea of international Batmen. Wouldn't some country other than America have a female Bat person?
I don't know.
Just realized, like, why isn't Knight Runner a woman? The French are into that weird stuff.
What weird stuff?
Yeah.
I don't know, like letting women do parkour.
What?
I don't know, like, I feel like if any country we were shown here would have a female Bat person, it would be France.
Okay, then.
No, but like, really, why isn't there one? Oh, the Squire count?
She'll probably be knight eventually, so.
Oh, that'd yes. be so cool.
Eventually. So, in, like, three generations of British Batman Incorporated, we will finally get a female member of Batman Incorporated. It just takes the death of two knights.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, but like it should happen. I don't know. You could no, Catwoman doesn't count because she existed before. Huh. I don't know. Anyway, we can get back to we can get back to serious discussion like the codpiece. Sorry for derailing us.
So that codpiece. Nah, I don't know.
So
something that stuck out to me. Wow, that was a really poor choice of words.
Oh.
Yeah, the cod piece did, huh? Stuck right out at you.
God damn it. This podcast episode.
Okay, last bit of thing to bring up about the art is these covers.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, there were some excellent ones in here.
They're just a really cool integration of art and design and lines, and it's just, they're beautiful. They're really, really pretty.
There was an issue, one of the covers for issue number 5 that was very Mignola-ish.
Oh, it's the, I think it's the one with the hood on the front.
No, it doesn't. It's the other one.
Oh, yeah, with the bright yellow background.
And the scorpion, yeah.
Yes.
Reminded me of Mike Mignola.
Yes. Mignola will be dark and creepy, but somehow be dark and creepy with a bright fucking yellow background. Only Mignola.
I don't think he actually drew it. The cover credits were for J.H. Williams and Yannick Paquette.
Yeah. But yeah, J.H. Williams' cover art is fucking amazing. And I just think, I think it's so awesome that he is doing comics, because he's obviously a really good, quote-unquote, legitimate artist. And if you want to say the comic book art, no, I'm not even going to say that. He's a really, really good artist. And I feel like there are a handful of people that give outside credibility to people who aren't into comics, right? Like, as an example, I have a lot of Amanda Connor art up on my walls, mostly of Power Girl, because it's me. And when people come in, they say, oh, cool, what comic is that from? Like, they can immediately see it's comic book art, it's comic booky, it's good comic book art, but they're like, that's from a comic book. I'm going to talk about it being from a comic book rather than talk about the merits of the art. I'm going to talk about comic books rather than art, which is kind of a lie. Mostly when they see the Power Girl art, they go, why are her boobs so big? But with J.H. Williams III, people would say, oh, wow, that looks amazing. And then they'll realize it's a comic book thing. And they'll talk about the art of the cover. They won't immediately say, what comic is that from? Is that Batwoman? What? Tell me about this character. They'll say, that art's really cool. I like this art. And they go into the art. And that is a really important distinction. Because as much as I love Amanda Connor, that's the reaction it gets. And as much as I love J.H. Williams III just as much, that's the reaction he gets.
Yeah, he, I think, would make... Well, not that the other artists wouldn't, but... He has such a distinct style, it almost makes us think of, like, you know, other professional illustration work we've seen outside the comics industry, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Man, the one with Batwoman, like, you know, he's had his practice with Batwoman, and
yes.
The one with her and Batman with the American flag in the background, I really love, because... Mm-hmm. So, my boyfriend's current obsession is the Hawkeye Initiative, because he hates it. He thinks it's real dumb, which is kind of a controversial viewpoint, but he doesn't think it's a good way to convey that idea. But it actually, this cover with Batman and Batwoman does kind of Hawkeye Initiative it. We get, like, kind of a crotch view of Batman perched on the landing. It's, like, more close up. He's more... like, kind of in a squat. And he has his leg up on the railing, too. Yeah. And then Batwoman's looming above him and looking very menacing and powerful. Like,
it's
she's ready.
All black and red. There's no facial tones. She is a shadow of vengeance.
Yeah, she's ready to, like, do some vigilante justice.
Yeah.
And just get down to business. So, I like, when he saw this cover, because I actually showed it to him and said, like, look how good this is. He said... It's like someone Hawkeye initiated it, but without Hawkeye. I thought that was kind of an interesting reaction, because it's true. And that's why J.H. Williams, I think, makes such notable art. He kind of takes conventions we're so used to and just overturns them ever so slightly, and we get something that you don't normally notice, but, like, kind of is there in the back of your brain.
Yeah. And even more telling, that cover... Batman has taken his codpiece off.
Ooh.
Oh, well, there you go. Sex ended up a little bit.
Yeah. Batman Sex Corporated. Also, because I love Tron, I want to say I like the cover of 8. Who drew that one? I don't even know. I'm a terrible podcaster. I don't have any information in front of me.
Well, the art inside was done by Scott Clark.
Yes, but the cover was by Chris Burnham. My boy, I've been pipping him all episode. Chris Burnham with the Tron cover. Oh, but see, he has the codpiece on in the virtual world. Choices.
You gotta protect himself from viruses.
Yeah, dude, you gotta protect your EP.
I think this episode's winding down.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we're ready to write this. go ahead, Jen.
Okay. Oh no. Numbers are so hard to think of, Last week, I was completely ready to say 3.5. And this week, you know, right before the podcast, I was feeling kind of like, it kind of wore away and didn't seem as good. But now that we've talked about it again, I think I'm back to 3.5. So I'll go with that. I don't know. I felt like the plot was too disjointed. And that was my biggest gripe with this. But all the little tidbits were really interesting, and I wanted to know more. And, you know, there's already that volume 1 in parentheses volume 2 out, so I'll probably pick that up, because I feel like this was a nice investment. And kind of treat it as like an omnibus, because I really do think that would have been a better way to read these.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's more like build up and resolution there. So like knowing that there's already trades published actually makes my rating higher. If it was individual issues and we were waiting to see, I'd be a bit more dubious. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. It was fun, and I wanted to kind of know who everyone was and what they were doing and, you know, what would happen to them. I liked the art. I thought that it was easy to read that art, and it was very good at kind of telling the story and also making it entertaining. That's always good. So yeah, 3.5.
All right. David?
I will also be assigning this a 3.5. I thought this was a fun read. Even though I complained a little bit about the disjointed nature of it, and Jen had the same complaint, I thought it was neat how everything was building up and getting and becoming pieced together. I was a little bit let down in the fact that it was like, surprise, it was Talia all along. Ha ha ha. I was like, I like Talia and I like Ra's al Ghul and I like that whole, their whole deal, but it was like this, I don't know, it seemed so out of character for her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was a little bit disappointed. And then she was like, I put a bounty on Damien's head. It's like, well, boo, that's dumb. I mean, I know what happens. I know how that plays out because I read the internet. But
I don't know if you actually know, because I read the internet too. And having read Volume 2, it turned out a lot differently than I thought it did.
Okay, well, then I'll have to read Volume 2.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to borrow those from you. But I thought it was a fun read. It's neat seeing all these different incarnations of Batman and how they came to be in different parts of the world based on the situation that each hero is in. The art was good, except I didn't really like the Internet 3.0 issue 8 art at all. I mean, I appreciate the work that an artist puts into it, but I thought it was trying a little too hard to look digital, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't love that, but, you know, overall, I enjoyed this, and I think it's a pretty good, it's a pretty fun story, so 3.5.
All right. It's hard for me to rate this objectively, but I'm going to try. I'm going to give it a 2.5. A full, like, what is that, letter grade lower than you guys? Sure.
Yeah.
Just, there were so many things in this that felt weird or poorly constructed. Like, for me, it's so odd that Bruce Wayne would come out in public support of Batman and create Batman Inc. And it's like, you're pretty much standing there saying, hey, everybody, I'm Batman. And it's such a difficult premise to buy. It's almost like back when we were reading the old Iron Man comics and everybody believed that Iron Man was Tony Stark's bodyguard. And it's like, that does not work. That's impossible for me to believe as a reader today. And the same way this feels impossible. And Grant Morrison writes it off by saying, haha, I'm making posts on the internet about it. No, nobody will know. And it's like, yeah, okay, that's going to happen anyway, but you're still making it way too easy to figure out, bro. That's weird. It also bugs me that there's no Batman incorporated female characters, but mostly for me it's that I read Volume 2, and Volume 2 is the same idea. It's this comic but done 10 times better. It's a coherent story from start to end. It has a beginning, it has a purpose, a goal, a climax, and a denouement, and it's phenomenally better. I would give that thing a 4.5, or I give this a 2.5. Because this just feels disjointed. Hey, there's this character. Look at him really close. Really, really close. But it doesn't matter at all. So look at this guy now. Look at this guy. Action here. Action, action, action. Scorpiana! What's with the weird scorpion head tail thing? And it doesn't come together in a way that I feel like it's supposed to. And then, like you say, David, at the end it's just, surprise, Talia! Okay. That said, God, Man of Bats was really fucking good.
Yeah, that issue on its own, I think, is like a 4.
Yeah,
at least.
I mean, El Gaucho, and none of us said El Gaucho was our favorite, and yeah, he's corny in his portrayal and all that kind of stuff, but I love him the way I love, like, the crappy Machete movie. That movie's fucking terrible and so much fun to watch. Or, like, Italian Spider-Man. You know, this feels like that. And if you read it like that, God, it's good. Even the El Gaucho stuff, it's not related to anything. Really, it doesn't, like, Scorpiana, El Sombrero, it's just fun. It's fun. There's dumb stuff that happens around there, but it's fun. And Mr. Unknown is fun. I just wish that there was more substance to this trade. It's just fun. Whereas, having read 2, like I said earlier, 2 has substance. And if you read the first issue, you'll know what I mean by the pun. It has a lot of meat to it. Yeah. So, 2.5 for this one. Okay. And I would strongly suggest everybody, if you read this one, go pick up Volume 2. If you didn't read this one, go pick up Volume 2.
I'm definitely going to read it.
I mean, yeah. And I know it's our thing to pick up Volume 1s of this stuff, and I wouldn't be saying this if I hadn't read it, but I think we made a bad choice and we should have read the other one. And so I'm going to loan both of you guys the next one.
Sweet.
Next week, though, this is a Morrison versus Miller series. We did our 2 Morrison episodes. Whether we did the right ones or not, those are the ones that we picked. So next we're going to go into Frank Miller, and we're going to go off with Dark Knight Returns. This is the 4-issue miniseries from 1986. This is the thing that everybody says Frank Miller made Batman relevant again with these 4 issues. These are supposed to be like the foundational pieces for this character. So I'm really excited to read these because it's missing chunk of my credibility as a comic book reader that I have never read this. This is one thing that like everybody says, you need to read this. This is Batman. This is Batman. Batman wouldn't be relevant today. He would still be Adam West if it wasn't for Frank Miller. So I'm excited to read this bad boy. Like I said, 1-4 from 1986. If you want to know what we got coming up after that one, the second issue in the Morrison versus Miller foursome, you can get that information from our website, which is www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. You can also send us an email at
atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
You can interact with us on all kinds of social media, facebook.com/apsupercast, twitter.com/apsupercast, and apsupercast.tumblr.com, and I actually posted things to it.
Snap. Yeah,
like 4? That's it, but they're there, and I did it, and I actually designed a page and everything, so you can go there and follow us, I think is the word, and like our posts. Do those things. Also, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Cool. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.